This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Hey there, happy hump day, everybody. Glad to be here with you. It is Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester. It is Sports Daily, Max Power producing. We're glad to have you however it is that you take us in. And make us part of your day, whether you're listening to us over the air on your drive to work on KFH, of course, 97.5 FM, 1240 AM, whether you're listening to us on the Odyssey app, maybe you're listening to the podcasted form of this show, which you can find each and every day on the Odyssey app, just search KFH, and whether you're watching us on a video stream, 12 News Connected, on YouTube, on X, we are glad to have you however it is you are consuming the program. We have a fun show today. Wichita State Athletic Director Kevin Saul going to try in between flights to connect with us here in just a few minutes, a little later this hour. So we'll have that. We will also get Tria Eslada, our KU insider, in. Certainly the Jayhawks have had back-to-back nice performances here that maybe rekindle some of that hope they could do something special in March. It's a busy, busy day at the Combine each and every day, but it was a particularly newsworthy day for the Kansas City Chiefs yesterday at the NFL Combine. We'll get into all of it today. Your calls, comments, commentary. Tommy, how are you?
I'm good. Happy Wednesday. A lot to get into. I think you laid out everything we've got going on the show today. So I'm looking forward to getting right into it.
It's a game night tonight in college hoops. We've got a little bit of action for you. We've got K-State tonight, Wichita State tomorrow. Of course, we'll get into that a little bit as well as we make our way through. K-State gets a road trip to UCF. They're 4.5-point dogs. I think we'll watch there is the health of Coleman Hawkins. We'll have our K-State insider on Tim Fitzgerald tomorrow. And then Wichita State plays tomorrow. Looking forward to a conversation with Kevin Saul and getting the latest on just kind of what it's like around the program right now as they've gotten on a heater here, sort of reset their season and erased that really bad second straight year of, quite frankly, really bad conference play to open things. So we'll get that take in just a few minutes as he joins the program. But Tommy, the thing that had everybody talking yesterday was all this Chiefs news. And we're going to dig into all of this, but you've got bombs dropped by Brett Veach yesterday, alluding to Travis Kelce's return, alluding to a potential reunion with Trey Smith because of the increased salary cap. He's just got us steered at all kinds of different directions here.
Yeah, I mean, it was great to hear from Brett Veach yesterday just because of everything that, you know, he was talking about and all the different, you know, news and notes that, you know, we've been speculating on and everybody has been for quite a while. And kind of nonchalantly, casually, just like released all of this information about Travis Kelce, you know, feeling like they're going to have him back and that he's been fired up and left things off with a desire to play in 2025. So that was big. And then, as you mentioned, the Trey Smith news, which, you know, they don't have a deal. I don't know how close they are to a deal, if they're still far away, whatever. But at least the optimism, it sounds like, is there on the side of the Chiefs that they can potentially get a deal done with him because of the increased salary cap.
Yeah, it's all interesting. Look, Trey Smith is great. Love to have Trey Smith back. I just have sort of written it off as a non-possibility. So if it is a possibility, that certainly does change some things, I think, about how the Chiefs would approach some of the decisions they have to make. And then, of course, the Travis Kelce news is the big news. You know, it's interesting. My first, and look, he's not guaranteeing anything. I think initially, you know, when this came out and people were like, oh, Brett Veach, you know, there was, I forget which, you know, national reporter put something out on it. It was the first time I'd seen it. It was like, oh, he's coming back. And then you read it and you listen to it and you hear Andy Reid and you're like, well, I think they think he's coming back. I don't know. And there, I think there's a small part of me that's like, well, isn't it a little strange that we don't just hear this from Kelce? I think Veach is just being honest there in how they're approaching this and sort of the last thing they left off with Kelce. I don't think Kelce needs some grand reveal on social media or through his podcast. I think it'll just sort of happen one way or the other, unless he retires. Now, if he retires, it would probably be a little more, you know, dramatic. But if he comes back, I mean, you're just kind of coming back, right? So I think people are
not going to do it on his,
like,
on his
LeBron
podcast.
James Miami moment, but I don't think we're going to get that if he's coming back. If he retires, maybe, but if he comes back, he's just going to kind of come back.
Well, I mean, if he doesn't announce it on social or on his podcast or whatever, right, how's he getting, like, you know, will he, you know, pull a Michael Jordan and send a fax that just says, I'm back? Like, what, I mean, what else is he going to do?
I don't think so. I think it'll happen, and then he'll just be on his podcast, and his brother will ask him about it, and then they'll just talk about it organically. If he's coming back. If he's leaving, that's a totally different story. Then who knows what, you know, then who knows? You got to, you know, get everything ready and have all the pomp and everything. But, I mean, if he's, it's never really been, other than, look, if he didn't have the moment in his podcast where, and the reason everybody loves that podcast is because it feels real, right? It feels like they're just, you know, having real conversations. I think you could see and hear the doubt in his mind. And that's the first time that's ever happened, right? Where it's like he's gassed a little bit here. Andy Reid was also asked about it yesterday and just sort of said, I told him to step away, catch his breath, and then let's talk again down the road. So, you know, Reid not quite as definitive, but like it is going to be a big deal to whichever way they have to steer. Is it as big a deal as what they have to do with Trey Smith? Probably not as it concerns the salary cap. But, you know, that it's something that will alter the way they have to attack pass catcher in the draft or not attack pass catcher or whatever it is that they end up needing to do. So it's impactful to everybody outside of just that one individual player making a decision.
But I do think that it is more impactful, the reaction and the opinion of Brett Veach in this regard, as opposed to Andy Reid. Not that Andy Reid's not important. He absolutely is. But Brett Veach is the one who's going to be the architect of the draft. And free agency starts in a couple of weeks. Yeah. And like, he's going to be the one who is going to, you know, sort of be the conductor and figuring out how to put the different pieces together in this offseason. If he feels optimistic that Travis Kelce is returning, that's going to potentially alter the direction that he takes and the different things that he does this offseason. So, you know, Andy Reid, you know, when it comes to game day, and obviously he's involved in so many different things in the organization, so I'm not discounting his role whatsoever, but I do think that Brett Veach, like if Brett Veach at the combine was like, man, we just don't know, you know, and I don't have any way to tell, and we'll find out whenever. Like, I'd be a little bit more concerned overall about all of this, But I think what we're dealing with here, it's pretty simple. I think Travis Kelce played a long season. He's tired. He's older. All that stuff. It was a crushing, devastating loss in the Super Bowl, and the emotions were raw and real at the end of it. And once you step away and catch your breath a little bit, and you know, reflect and all of that, I think he's going to be ready to go. I think he's going to be ready to play on this team in 2025.
And don't forget, I mean, Andy Reid, I'm pretty sure, helped write the textbook on coach speak too. Like there's never been a coach speakier coach than Andy Reid. So you can't really,
and he's never going to tip his hand. He's literally never going to show his cards.
Never in any way. So I think it was a real moment. Again, we've thought Kelce was going to return the whole time, but we'll get into that and everything else happening at the combine. We'll dig into the Trey Smith and all of the news of that as we make our way through today. All right. Have touch base with Kevin Saul. He did just land, and we are going to be able to catch him in between his flights. So we're going to bring him in. It's been about a month since we've been able to catch up, so it'll be an interesting conversation. We'll have that for you on the other side here. So we'll make that connection, and we'll talk a little Shockers. We'll return on Sports Daily.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey. I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey's State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry. And get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH. And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
And welcome back in, everybody. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us nice and fueled up. I imagine Kevin Saul could use a nice cup of coffee right now on the red eye just landing here. Were you in Hawaii, Kevin? Welcome into Sports Daily. It's been a minute.
Yeah, it has been a while. Good to talk to you this morning. Yeah, just landed in Dallas-Fort Worth, coming back from Honolulu. Was out with basketball and Boca Raton for the win against Florida Atlantic, and then left the next morning and came out and watched four of the five baseball games, and headed back now for a full weekend slate.
Yeah, it's busy, man. Like there's a lot going on all over the country, basically. Let's talk basketball for a little bit, Kevin. It's been quite a stretch for Shocker basketball. 6-game winning streak for Paul Mills' crew. They're back to 500 in conference play, and definitely beating some opponents that have been challenging in the past for Wichita State to beat. And we've seen that with Memphis, saw that with Tulane, saw that with Florida Atlantic. It's definitely been a stretch of basketball that it's been fun to watch, and we've seen some really great individual contributors. But just overall, it seems like the vibe is quite a bit higher with this team than it was, say, like a month ago.
To say the least,
yeah,
for sure. Winning 6 in a row certainly changes the vibe for sure. But I think what's really interesting is a lot of folks that I engage with, our donors and season ticket holders, will ask, "How's the head coach doing? Is he feeling a whole lot better? Is he more relaxed? He's the exact same guy he was 8 weeks ago. The exact same guy he was 6 months ago. He's an absolute grinder. He is about as level-headed as it comes in terms of sticking to process, and I think our guys have really embraced that thought process, because you're starting to hear them talk about with each other about process, about sticking to the process, that it's not necessarily about the result at the end of the game. We're competing against ourselves. We're competing against an opponent. There is a process to this thing. The practices have been really, really good. So it's been a good stretch for us for sure. Turning what was a really difficult start, a 1-7 start, into a 7-7, and we got four games to play and a lot to accomplish in those four games. I think you've got an outside chance to get into the top four, which would give you the double bye in the conference tournament. Otherwise, it's likely we would play our first game on Thursday, but certainly looking for the best seeding we can get.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, Kevin, that I can sense or get a feel of is I think there's confidence again, like there was going into the conference slate, that the Shockers are good enough to beat anybody in the league. I mean, they've obviously proven that against Memphis, but consistently good enough they can be through this stretch. This is no cupcake portion of the schedule. They're finally catching the fire we thought that might be there. And I guess the question for me would be, is that translating over? You mentioned having conversations with donors and the, like, is that sort of momentum? Are you tangibly feeling that among the non-players, among fans, among supporters, everybody else?
Yes, we are, for sure. We had a really good contingent go out. It's one of the reasons I went to Hawaii. We had about 30 donors and season ticket holders that made that trip out to Hawaii with baseball, and we actually had a kind of a watch party at an outdoor bar and restaurant location there in Honolulu, and we had all 30 of them there, and the excitement was really enjoyable. Some anecdotal data points where you're getting text messages from folks that are sharing with you that influencers in the community are talking about getting back in and season tickets, and we're starting to generate some list of names of folks that are interested, and our renewals process will kick up shortly after the season concludes. So there certainly has been some momentum, and I think perspective is really important. I looked at this on the flight, guys, just to kind of see where we are from a historical perspective. And at 32 wins in his first two seasons, and we've got, four games to go, Coach, two facts One, he's got the highest first two season win total in 38 years of Shocker head coaches, which is a really, to me, is a very interesting data point. He's one win away from being basically the third highest in our program's history. We played basketball here for 119 years. So when you look at it through that lens and perspective, there certainly has been some ups and some downs, but when you look at the complete picture of the first two seasons, it stacks up really well with other head coaches that have led our program.
Kevin, I mentioned a couple moments ago some individual contributors that, you know, have really been, you know, great over this last six games for Wichita State. Corey Washington, of course, was the American Player of the Week last week. And then this week, Xavier Bell took home the honor for the Conference Player of the Week. And, you know, Xavier's had just a great stretch of basketball, a pair of 20-point outings when they beat Florida Atlantic and then Tulane back here at home. He's been really great. Of course, he's the local guy. Having an opportunity to watch him and then, you know that he's been able to, you know, come back to Wichita State, bring his brand of basketball to the Shockers, and knowing that he's from right here in Wichita has got to be pretty special.
It is special. You guys know that. And you know, Terry's trying to get the same thing going, bringing a lot of Wichita women back to our women's basketball program. It's always fun when you've got local talent. And those two guys have done a phenomenal job in addition to several others. But first and foremost, they're great human beings to be around and to grow and develop with. You know, Corey responded well to having a tough game. What was that against Florida Atlantic was a tough one for him. But it's interesting, guys. We haven't had an American Athletic Conference Player of the Year, I think, since 21. And the Shockers have earned one in back-to-back weeks. So really good for us. We've had some great individual performances. Bijan's probably played his best two or three game stretch of his time here. Ronnie Gray continues to be an absolute machine from an offensive rebound perspective and getting some putbacks and really sparking our team in unique ways. But I think you could kind of go down the whole roster and talk about each guy's contributions. But it certainly has been a really nice stretch. You've got to keep it going. We've got a tough one against UAB, who sits in the top three in the league. That one's at 8 o'clock on Thursday. It's an important night for us, too. It's our Champions for Literacy night. You guys may have seen some social media in that. We've been heavily engaged in that for the last 3 years, providing books for 14 Title I elementary school children to take home over the summer. We're closing in our $15,000 goal, which will get doubled to 30, and we're leading the country in that respect. So really important that we pour into our community, and Thursday night will help us to do that.
Big opportunity, national television, good opportunity for a good crowd, and they've looked good the last few games. There's still four to go, and I don't want to look too far ahead, but I do wonder, when you get hot like this, and you know, there's still hot to come potentially, there's a lot that will have to be replaced next year that didn't have to be replaced this year. How much does what happens between right now and the end of this season, whatever that looks like, help you guys when you talk about program building? Because there will have to be a roster rebuild next year for sure.
Yeah, you know, we've got an opportunity to bring some guys back that may have some additional years, and we may have a waiver or two that we can try to navigate. But you're right, Jacob, it's going to be relatively significant turnover. And we've talked about it on your show this year. You know, the average American Athletic Conference team this past offseason lost eight players on their roster, and we only lost three. And so from that perspective, our retention was much better than the peers in our league. I think we're probably going to be closer to that six or eight number in the offseason, but we'll see how that goes. But you've got four regular season games to go. You've got at least one in the conference tournament. Obviously, we all have aspirations to go much deeper than that, but we're guaranteed one in the conference tournament. And I think how we play over those five games will speak a lot to our retention efforts, our recruiting efforts. I certainly think the last six, seven-game stretch here has been very helpful in recruiting. Coaches have a very good plan. We will be increasing, assuming the House settlement passes on April 7th, we'll increase our NIL number and call it revenue share next year. And I do anticipate our revenue share number will be in the top two in the league.
Let's talk baseball a little bit here, Kevin. It's been a challenging stretch for the Shockers to kick off their season, dropping 2 of 3 at McNeese and then dropping 3 of 4 at Hawaii, and then, you know, losing in the finale against Chaminade just the other day. Of course, you know, Brian Green's crew back here in Wichita to kick things off the home opening home stretch this weekend, taking on Cal State Fullerton. You know, obviously getting off to a great start is super important, but I know it's been kind of a challenging stretch with some injuries and different things like that with the team. What's your outlook? Where do you see things, you know, as we stand right now?
Well, we've stumbled coming out of the gates here, and I would share with you that there is plenty on our plates to obviously get better, and I had a lengthy conversation with Brian on the field after the Chaminade loss, and that's certainly unacceptable from both his and my perspective. We got a lot of things that we need to work on. That being said, that first weekend at McNeese, and make sure I can get this right, guys, because the list is pretty long, I think we were down 4 starters. Mosey, right field, Jordan Rogers, center field, Jared Washburn at second, and then Mo at catcher. And then Cam Dernan is your starting shortstop that's coming off Tommy John surgery, and he has been hitting, but he has not been fielding. So you look at that, that's 5 defensive starters that we are down currently, and certainly that speaks to the slow start. There are some other elements that are definitely within our control that speak to the slow start as well that we'll be addressing. But we're excited to get these guys back home. They got a tough series this weekend against Fullerton. Fullerton has played Stanford and Fresno State so far this year, so they'll be ready to come into X Stadium and give us everything that they've got. But we do anticipate that we will be, after the Fullerton weekend, we should be back to 100% healthy, provided nobody else gets injured. Really excited to start the home season there. Softball starts their home season as well. Those first base loge box seats at baseball are sold out. I think we're about 60% sold out behind the home plate, so there's been some really good response there as well.
That's awesome, and it's kind of fun to get them both in at the same. I mean, there's so much action happening between the two fields, including – for softball, just a couple of more. I mean, this schedule is outstanding to start the year. You want to talk about, you know, growth potential, but by the time this thing is through this weekend, of it, with the way it currently stands, they will have played, I think it's 6 or 7 ranked teams, 2 of them coming in this series. They get Oklahoma State and Nebraska in that. But Coach Breadbinner certainly not backing down from the early challenges, as she never does, to get them ready for the conference season once it starts a little less than a month from now.
You know, I think we've got a really good group of head coaches that like to coach and schedule very challenging schedules, guys. If you look at it, like Coach Lamb does it in volleyball, Christie's done it. Brian's schedule is not an easy one. Coach Mills has aspirations, and I both have aspirations to play a really challenging schedule. Terry Nooner has done so as well. So I think that's where you have to be if you're Wichita State. Not only does it prepare you for league play, but it gives you the resume that gives you a shot at that large bid. So you got to go out and win a few of those, but they host a really unique event that kind of rotates between Missouri, Nebraska, Oklahoma State, and us. And it'll be great competition this weekend with Oklahoma State, Missouri, 2 against South Dakota State and Nebraska. So one thing I would like to share with our fans is obviously we try to be as strategic as we can on home game times for softball and baseball. There are going to be some conflicts, right? When you guys look at a typical Friday, Saturday, Sunday series, there's not much flexibility on Fridays to offset those schedules, because you're not going to start anything any earlier than 5 o'clock, right? And you're probably not going to go, you're not going to want to go much later than 10 o'clock. So there's going to be some overlaps on Fridays. We tried to be strategic on the Saturdays, and then Sundays are getaway days. There's not a whole lot of wiggle room there as well. So we do have some great ticketing packages where folks can go back and forth, and we look forward to hosting those events. It's always fun on campus when the weather starts to warm up and you got baseball and softball going.
Before we let you go, Kevin, we'd be remiss to not mention TBT coming back to Wichita in July, the 6th year that Wichita State has hosted that regional. It you know, speaks to definitely the attendance and the support and the excitement that comes around TBT. But another announcement, another exciting year of TBT coming back to Wichita.
Yeah, Wichita State's been the leader in that thing, and you have to give credit to our senior associate AD, Brad Pittman, and his staff, Tyler, Taylor, Kayla. They do a phenomenal job with those. It gets better every single year. Wichita State has been the absolute leader in hosting the TBT and longevity and quality for a really long time. So we're excited about that coming back to Coke Arena in July. And we got a couple of other really good things going on this week, guys. We've got our indoor track and field teams are both at the American Athletic Conference Championship this week. Our men have a legitimate shot to bring home a trophy. So watch that one closely this weekend. And then our bowling team, who is really doing a phenomenal job. They had two wins this last weekend against number four, Arkansas State. Their record sits at, brace yourself, guys, their record sits at 68-31 this season. Mm. They're ranked seventh in the country, and it won't be long here. They'll be getting into conference play and then into the national championship. So Coach Holly's done a great job in her first year, and the young women in our program are really excited. We've got two more regular seasons before we get into conference and then NCAAs.
Kevin, we appreciate it. Safe travels the rest of the way. Shocker softball Thursday, kind of a doubleheader with men's basketball. You'll hear basketball with us here on your home of the Shockers over on KEYN. Safe travels the rest of the way. We appreciate you carving out a little time in the busy travel schedule this morning.
Thanks so much for having us on, guys. Go Shockers.
There you go. Saul, good to catch up there. We can digest a little bit of that here over the next couple of minutes, Tommy. Men's basketball, of course, front and center on everybody's mind. It's great to hear that a streak like this can help off the court, a stretch of basketball that we've been waiting for, that we knew was there. We saw it earlier this year, right? And then to see him get back to it and buy in, as he mentioned, and all of that stuff, it really does add just a really, really, I guess, keep telling everybody, like, I'm so happy for the team, right? Like, that's exactly how I feel. Like, I'm happy for them that there's buzz now here as we come down the home stretch, because that's all we want, right? Like, when you're a fan, you just want to chip in a chair. Everybody knows this team now is capable of beating anybody in a conference tournament. It's all you need, right? You just need that hope that it can happen, and certainly they have that back.
Yeah, when you're 1-7, you know, to kick off the conference season, there's really no, at that point, you're kind of like, well, I mean, shoot, like, what are they playing for at this point? I mean, playing for pride, I'm sure, playing to pull themselves out of the hole, like all of that.
Fan's perspective, but
it's like, you know, are you competing for anything major at this point? And credit to them, 1-7 is a deep hole to pull yourself out of, and they've been able to do it. Now, I'm sure that, you know, they're 500 in conference play, and you know, especially a couple of those losses that should have been wins, you know, for Wichita State early on, you're thinking, man, we could be significantly better than 500 right now. But man, like, it just that takes tenacity. It takes dedication. It takes determination. It takes all of that to be able to get yourself back to a point to where, you know, you're in relevancy again. You're in relevancy from the fan base. You're in relevancy with, you know, against opponents. Like, I would imagine that any one of the four remaining opponents that Wichita State faces in the regular season, they're paying attention to Wichita State, where maybe before they weren't quite as much. So that it's all good, and you've got to continue to keep that going the final four games.
We can go back and look at those. The Combine is a place of news, Tommy, and we'll get into the Chiefs news of it again in our next hour. But one of the other things that continues to be a headline, and it's, I guess, a point of debate of how impactful this is, but it feels pretty impactful, is what's happening at quarterback for the Rams and the ripple effects of it. So now what we're getting in the last 24 hours or so is that the Rams really could trade Matthew Stafford. There's real interest there. It has to do with this contract and how much money is guaranteed left. So I think Stafford would like to have more. The Rams don't want to do it, so they've given him permission to go see if another team might be interested in doing it. And then, so if that happens, with the report I see yesterday being that the Steelers, Giants, and Raiders could already be interested here, Then what? Because the part of that that's never made sense to me is, why would the Rams do that? They're going to be a Super Bowl contender next year, based on what we saw from them last year, especially late in the year. And the answer may be Aaron Rodgers. Apparently, the Rams is where Rodgers would like to be, where he would like to end up. And the Rams have some interest because they've got some coaching connections to him now. And apparently there is a desire to perhaps bring Devontae Adams with him. I would imagine Rodgers will be expensive, but only for 1 year, whereas Stafford's looking to maybe extend that down a little bit. So it is beginning to make some sense. At the forefront of it, though, Tommy, is if we know, or at least I think the Rams are in a position to be Super Bowl contenders, would they still be with Aaron Rodgers over Stafford? I think Stafford's better at this point of his career. Give Rodgers the benefit of the doubt in coming back in year two after an Achilles, but I'll take what Stafford's been giving over what Rodgers has been giving lately. And so I just don't know if that's if it's a lateral move, if it's a downgrade, maybe it's an upgrade between the two quarterbacks.
I think it's probably a lateral move, but I don't believe that they're a Super Bowl contender either way. We've talked about that at length, where I think that they're a good team. I think that they will challenge, you know, win their division potentially in the NFC, make it to the playoffs,
right,
all of that.
Eagles in the playoffs this year.
I get it, but I don't believe that, all things being equal, I don't think that, especially if they move on from Cooper Kupp, I don't see them beating the Eagles. I don't see them beating the Lions. I don't believe that they are a Super Bowl contender in that conference. I think they can make the playoffs. I think they can maybe even win a game in the playoffs, but I think that's kind of where their ceiling is, regardless if it's Matthew Stafford or Aaron Rodgers. So I think that this is a little bit forward thinking for the Rams, where it's like, look, we don't want to sign Matthew Stafford for multiple more years because we don't think that we are legitimate Super Bowl contenders with him. We think we're probably a playoff team, but that's probably our ceiling. So we don't want to kick the can down the road and give him a multi-year deal. So let's go ahead and trade him, or let's move him out, get some value back in return. Bring in Aaron Rodgers as a bridge guy for a season. I just hope that at that point they've got their eyes on what the future then looks like after Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. Is there somebody in the draft class, not this season, but next year, that they could look at potentially to be their quarterback of the future? Is there an impending free agent after next season at quarterback that they would like to hitch their wagon to long term? So I think that they're looking more futuristically at this point, like, hey, we're okay with one more year bringing in Aaron Rodgers, maybe even Devontae Adams, as kind of this bridge, kind of this, you know, stopgap at quarterback offensively. But then we're gonna try to retool. We're gonna try to bring in a younger quarterback to pair with Kyren Williams and Puka Nacua and go from there.
So I would prefer Stafford over Rodgers. I'm not sure I would prefer Stafford and Kupp over Rodgers and Adams. I'm not sure this isn't a push the chips in, because the longer term play, as Stafford is what, 37, is to give Stafford a 2 or 3 year deal. To me, that this kind of feels to me like they're pushing it all in this year, and they're going to get some sort of draft capital for Stafford. I don't think it's going to be anything out of this world, but I kind of think they are pushing it in a little bit. When you look at the Rams last year, so it took a while for all the young defensive players that they brought in to sort of find their way. But they had a win over Buffalo in that final stretch. They had a win at San Francisco. They beat the Vikings, remember, in the playoffs, and then it was within a touchdown at Philadelphia in the next round. I think everybody in the world thinks their defense is ascending. So I'm not sure if it's not the Rams to me in the NFC, it might be nobody in the NFC is a Super Bowl contender next year with Philadelphia. Maybe we still feel that way about San Francisco, but they're above everybody else. Right, to me, they are. And so it's like, okay. And honestly, I think two things can be happening. I think they can both feel like they could still get something for Stafford and maybe even get better with some combination of Rodgers and Adams. And also, I don't know what the future is going to be, because it's going to be difficult. They're probably going to win a bunch of games next year either way. When you put side by side Rodgers and Stafford last year, it's interesting. Stafford was rated quite a bit higher. He completed a higher percentage of his passes and threw fewer interceptions, but he also threw fewer touchdowns than Aaron Rodgers did a year ago. It's a run-based offense for sure. And Rodgers in a run-based offense, if they're really continuing to lean into Kyren Williams, but they can boast an offense that has Puka Nacua and Devontae Adams, I do think Rodgers can be successful in that. Can they be as successful if he just duplicates last year? I think it's probably pretty close, honestly. Their numbers were not far off. Now, Stafford, again, was asked to do far less than Rodgers was last year. But it is fascinating. And we knew this was, look, we knew it was going to happen. You knew Rodgers was going to get involved somehow with a contending team next year. How much of a contender we can talk about as the offseason goes on, but it's a contending team. And now does Stafford end up with any sort of contender? Probably not. And that's where it's like for Stafford, I'm like, man, like I know you want your money, but you're going to end up, unless you get lucky and end up with like the Steelers or something, you're going to end up with the Raiders or the Giants, and that's going to suck.
Well, I mean, I think he's got a couple of opportunities. I mean, you know, you mentioned the Steelers, and that would, I think, be an upgrade from
a great fit.
Whether it's Justin Fields or Russell Wilson. That's an upgrade, Matthew Stafford at quarterback for even a couple more years. Or he could potentially go to the Vikings. That would be intriguing, considering the amount of time that he spent with the Lions in the same division. Yeah. Because we don't know what the Vikings are going to do, if they're going to try to bring back Sam Darnold or what that'll look like. But I think that gives, I mean, can you imagine Matthew Stafford for a couple of years throwing to Justin Jefferson? Like, that'd be fun.
The only problem with that is they're not going to give him a multi-year deal because they got J.J. McCarthy sitting there.
Right. Well, you're right. And that might preclude the Vikings from going after him. Although, if you've got an opportunity to bring in Matthew Stafford for a couple of years with the offense that you have and how dynamic that offense was with Sam Darnold, like, think about, you know, I don't know. If I'm the Vikings, I'm like, man, I get that J.J. McCarthy's our quarterback of the future, but maybe we hold him out for a little bit longer, you know, and we bring in Matthew Stafford because we've got the pieces right now to win right now, and it's an upgrade at quarterback going from Sam Darnold to Matthew Stafford. I don't know if they would do that, you know, but that could be a possible scenario. The Steelers, I think, are a really good fit for Matthew Stafford, but at the end of the day, don't get me wrong, it's not that I think the Rams are trash. I think they're a good organization. I like Sean McVay. I always have. I think he's a really sharp coach. And they've got a young defense that's really good. They've got great playmakers at the skill positions, all of that. So don't get me wrong. I think they're good. I just don't think that they're – I think that they're probably third or fourth in the NFC as far as who where I would rank them as far as a likely representative in the Super Bowl as the team is constructed right now. If Matthew Stafford is on the team, you know, I think that they're probably third or fourth. I think they're clearly behind the Eagles. They're clearly behind the Lions, and they might even be behind the Niners in their own division at this point. So I don't know. I'm not willing to say that I think even if they keep the team together with Matthew Stafford and they don't move him, that they're a Super Bowl contender this season at all. They're a playoff team, yes. A Super Bowl contender, no, in my opinion.
Yeah, and look, that's semantics. They obviously feel like they are, which is why you would even have any of these conversations. They certainly feel like they're Super Bowl contenders. Whether they are or they aren't, it's up to Aaron Rodgers. Stafford to the other than the fact that Stafford's never really been a cold weather guy. I mean, he's played a lot in cold weather, but him to Pittsburgh is, to me, is the one on both sides that would make a ton of sense, because the Steelers could give him a 2 or 3 year deal and be done with this and finally know with Mike Tomlin now, you have a good quarterback now. Like, we can put that stuff to bed. You got a Hall of Famer in there, one that has a little more tread on the tires than your last Hall of Fame effort with Russell Wilson.
But I think any team he goes to, assuming he leaves the Rams, they get better. The teams get better with him there. But
the Steelers get a lot better, right?
Like, you know, let's say he goes to the Giants and he reunites with his brother-in-law with the Giants. You know, he'd be thrown to Malik Neighbors, and that'd be really cool to watch. They become better, but they go from, well, how many games did they win this last season? Like four, you know, or whatever. Like, maybe they're a 7-win team, you know, or an 8-win team. Like, they're not a playoff team at that point. The Raiders, you could go there, you could play with Pete Carroll, and you could throw the ball to Brock Bowers. That would be fun. But again, they're probably going to be a 6, 7, 8-win team, you know, with all of that. So, yeah, he makes whatever team he goes to better. But the pieces in Pittsburgh are already better, and I think that gets them, you know, that would make the AFC North, it's already a highly competitive division. It would make it that much more competitive when you look at the Ravens and you look at the Bengals and then you look at the Steelers. I think the Browns are out of the picture at this point, at least for next season. But that makes that division, I mean, it was fun last year. It'd be even more fun this coming season if he ends up with Pittsburgh.
I root for Stafford. I root for Tomlin, so I would like that fit. I'd definitely be interested in Rodgers and Davante Adams. You know, I'd be interested in them and with the Rams. I would be. You know, that's one of the few places where Rodgers. I mean, Sean McVay is not taking second fiddle to anybody. Rodgers is not going to go in there and push around Sean McVay as the coach. It's not going to happen. So that would be a good fit too. Bit of breaking news here is I'll make a quick turn before we get into our next hour. Sharius Lotta joining us next hour, by the way. But we get some news from John Rothstein. K-State playing tonight. Coleman Hawkins with that knee injury, unlikely to play, according to Jerome Tang. He did not play, of course, in the last game, and he was hurt in the Utah game. So, look, his status becomes the most important thing for K-State basketball. Not so much in how much he plays the rest of the regular season, but if they don't have him for the postseason, that slim chance we've talked about where they've shown they can hang with any team in the conference is going to go out the window. Like, they've got to have Coleman Hawkins. He does too many things for the team. It's weird. It's been his offense that early in the season everyone was critical of, Tommy, but like, it's everything else he does that's kind of irreplaceable because of his size and like the physical skills he brings to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you could just look at, you know, the last game at home that they had an opportunity, you know, against Arizona State to win, and that offense was just stagnant without him. Like, they didn't move the ball, and he does so many different things to keep that rolling. Without him, I mean, he's severely missed.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, we'll get into that Chiefs conversation. I will also have Sharius Lotta in the second hour. Don't go away. More Sports Daily right after this.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Welcome in, everybody. It's another hour of Sports Daily. K-State basketball tonight here on 97.5, 1240 KFH. Tune in at 6 for the Wildcats on the road at UCF. You can listen here over the air online at kfhradio.com or download the Odyssey app and just search for KFH. No Coleman Hawkins tonight. It's going to make it tough against UCF. Now, they ought to be able to beat UCF on the road even without Hawkins, but it will be tough, and it doesn't really it doesn't tell me one way or the other, like, whether they can do that. I'd like to see them be able to do that, but I don't, you know, they can go on the road and win at UCF without Hawkins. Can they win a Big 12 tournament game against, you know, Texas Tech without him? I think that's a totally different conversation. So we'll see how they respond to it tonight. You can hear that game there. Tommy, Crestview Country Club, I'll be gone for a day from the show here. I've got to do some meetings, and it's a little uncomfortable because while I'm gone, you're going to be on a date with my wife.
I am. And my wife.
It's interesting.
I mean, I've got a lady for each arm. I've got two arms for a reason.
I'm not sure how that works. But, you know, that's all right. Cool, I guess.
Yeah. With weird. Crestview, they do monthly wine tastings. And so we scheduled for the four of us to go, and then you check your calendar and you're like, well, I'm going to be out of town. I've got, you know, work things I got to do. And you know what? You can't blame me, because your wife could have been like, you know what, honey, I'll set this one out because you can't be there. She still wants to go. And I'm like, well, hell,
not even a moment of hesitation. She's like, oh no, it's cool. I'll still go.
Yeah.
Like, you can do whatever. Yeah. Cause I'm slaving away, you know, trying to be a pioneer of industry. No, you're fine. You can't come.
Hey,
but I'm still going to go.
Let me put your mind at ease. I will take very good care of her while you're gone.
Mm-hmm, thanks.
Yeah.
She can certainly take care of herself.
That's very true. Yeah.
I'll just tell you this. She punches hard.
I was going to say both of our wives could kick our asses. Like, let's just be real about that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably good. A lot of people's wives, if we're being totally fair, but you know, it'll be fun. We appreciate Crestview. It's a cool thing that they're doing. I'm getting payback, though, because as you're having a wine tasting this week, next week, there's a beer tasting. And I am going to be able to make a little of that. So take that. But a little something for everything. We appreciate Crestview's support of the program. They have those events. I mean, it's almost nightly, honestly, that they do stuff like that. So we'll try to get there and sample them for you and bring you the reaction. But you can give Crestview a call. Talk to them about their memberships. I think they have a new membership director now.
They do.
I was just seeing, which is exciting. So give them a call. Tell them we sent you. We appreciate their support of the program. All right. So did you see any last night, Tommy, of Luka's return against Dallas. It wasn't a return to Dallas. It played in L.A., but one of the worst all-time trades. I mean, I'm not exaggerating when I say that. I know that I've been a fan of the Mavs over my lifetime. Not like a diehard or anything like that. I love Dirk Nowitzki. I love some eras of Mavericks basketball. But certainly having Luka Doncic there keeps you, a Mavs fan to some degree. Now it's like, whatever. I'm shopping around. I'm window shopping in the NBA to some degree. Luka, it's a triple double. No big deal against the Mavs.
It was cool to watch him, do that for sure. I mean, I had been a little concerned the first few games that he was in L.A. because he didn't play particularly well. It wasn't like, he was lighting the world on fire the first couple of games. But then you get a chance to face the team that traded you away. And, there's extra motivation for sure. Like, I always hear, whenever you're dealing with, work things, the whole phrase of, it's not personal, it's business. Well, no, this was personal for Luka. Like, it might have been business, but it was also extremely personal for him. And he goes out there with a triple-double and looks great doing it.
It's so one-sided personal, too. It's not like he wanted any of this. Like, he was as blindsided by it as anybody else. And again, Luka and LeBron fitting together is going to be a little awkward. That's not the point of any of this. Whether they win a title in the next couple of years doesn't matter as far as why it's one of the most idiotic trades we've ever seen in professional sports. If it's not the worst, and it might be the worst, it doesn't even matter. Luka could be an abject failure and disaster. And outside of the Mavericks winning some titles there's no path Mavericks to have done a nice job in this. None. There's none because they didn't get anything for Luka. Whether Luka's great in LA or not, you didn't get anything for it.
Well, you got Anthony Davis, who's now on the injury list for God knows how long.
And I hate that Anthony Davis catches strays and all this because Anthony Davis is one of the best players of a generation.
He can't stay healthy. It's not,
I know. Neither can Luka, to be fair. But it's not Anthony Davis's fault, right? I hate that he catches strays. That dude is an all-time great. He really is. It's not his fault he got caught up in this. But that was never enough to warrant trading. I mean, what Luka's got to be one of the most three desirable players in the NBA. This young unicorn who has carried the Mavericks to finals on his back. He carried the Mavericks to a finals despite the fact that those boneheads let Jalen Brunson walk. He still got him to the finals. And to get nothing essentially for him, you got Anthony Davis, but Anthony Davis is old, right? And to watch how NBA trades happen literally every year, where teams will trade 46 first round picks for mediocre players, and the Mavericks just didn't get it. It doesn't really matter what Luka does in LA to make this one of the more idiotic trades we've ever seen. And then he comes out and yes, he yawns out a triple double against the Mavericks, and he will haunt them for the rest of his career because he's wired that way. And how the hell do the Lakers do this? They do this all the time in the NBA. We talk about the NFL script writing going on. You kidding me? To send Luka out there as a gift? They got Shaq for a while. Will Chamberlain was a free agent, I think, for a while. They just get all these great, all these great players just end up in L.A. somehow with the Lakers. And now, if you're not sick of the Lakers yet, they're going to be relevant for the next 15 years with Luka.
Do you remember the year, and I think you and I were probably in college. I can't remember the exact year, but they had that year where they got Karl Malone and Gary Payton. What are we doing here? It's murderer's row at this point. But, they were past
their
prime.
And they got
prime.
Their asses they got their, kicked yeah, in they the finals not, by they, the Pistons,
yeah,
too.
They weren't,
year,
they weren't good. But yeah, it's like if you've got – it's kind of like what the Dodgers are doing in baseball. Any star player, they're gonna go play in LA.
But the Dodgers and the Yankees, which I see those comparisons, they still have to operate without a salary cap, right? They do it because they can just outspend everybody.
Right.
The Lakers can't just outspend everybody. It'd be like the equivalent of the Cowboys just always getting all the best free agents, which of course they don't, right? They never do. The Dodgers, they outspend everybody. That makes sense. The Lakers have the same salary cap as everybody else, yet they always end up with these star players in their back pocket. And this time, it wasn't even that the player chose to be there.
They were just gifted. They were gifted Luka.
Here, Lakers, why don't you have Luka? What do we need back? I don't know. Whatever. What? Let us help you. What helps you get Luka there? You give us Anthony Davis, take on that salary. No, I don't know. Don't worry about any draft picks. We're good. Like you guys have Luka. We'll just go back into irrelevancy here in Dallas.
Hey, Dallas still has a winning record as of right now.
That's really good. That's cute. Guess what? I couldn't tell you half the teams right now in the NBA with the winning record. Because it's all about relevancy at the top end in the NBA, and the Mavericks have none of it now and will have none of it without Luka there.
Can I also point out that I feel like this, you're dabbling and you're searching for a new team. I feel like it's taking a lot longer than it should. I feel like you should have your team
because I'm not watching any NBA. I'm not watching any NBA yet.
Like, just become a Thunder fan and call it good.
It's probably what's going to happen. I have always been fond of the Spurs. San Antonio is one of my favorite cities in the country. And I have great memories as a kid with the Spurs, and they have Wimby and all that. Now that Wimby's hurt, though, it's probably going to end up just being the Thunder.
And
we're
probably at the end of the Greg Popovich era in San Antonio. I mean, he's not going to return this season. The reporting a few days ago was that he may be done entirely. May walk away entirely. So. It could be a transitional time for sure for the Spurs. Meanwhile, the Thunder, I mean, they're continuing the ascent for sure. So that would be my vote. If you're a Mavs fan and you're disgruntled and you're like, I'm done, I can't do it anymore, just go a couple hours up the road to Oklahoma City.
Yeah,
call it good.
It's the most likely scenario. But I also like to, like, I attached myself to the 76ers as a kid because I loved Iverson. It's harder for me to do it now because I don't watch as much NBA until college basketball's finished. So, like, as of right now, I have very little knowledge of, like, the inner workings of this season individually. Other than, like, I know the Thunder are really good, right? But I'm not watching the NBA on a night-in, night-out basis. I'm watching college basketball on a night-in, night-out basis. So, yeah, I'll at least for this year, I'll give you that commitment. I'll become a Thunder fan for the rest of the year. There are great Thunder fans here, and I could appreciate, kind of getting on board with that. The problem, though, in the NBA is that you attach to a small market team, and you know they're never going to be able to keep their players, right?
They've built their team around a young core, and they were irrelevant for such a long time, and now they've gotten their core old enough and mature enough.
In 3 or 4 years, all those players will be gone, and that's...
And they'll do it all over again.
Maybe so, because they've done a good job twice. We'll be back. Chiefs talk next on Sports Daily.
You gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
If you want to win some HTO, now is your chance. You can text to win a free cup of iced tea from either the East or West Wichita location or in Derby. All you have to do to enter the contest is text the keyword tea to the short code 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck there, everybody. More than 26 flavors to choose from on us here at Sports Daily. All right, Tommy, the Chiefs news. We talked about this right off the top, but let's dig in a little bit. So yesterday at the NFL Combine, what happened is Brett Veach talked, and two big newsworthy items came out of that. And a lot of good stuff came out of it. But two things are sort of headline-y. The first being Travis Kelce and Veach alluding to the fact that they feel like, or he feels like, Kelsey's going to be back, right? Like that's in summation what you had there. And here's what it was. The gist of it is they're fired up about, he's fired up, Veach said, about entering the final year. Quote, we left it as he'd be back and we're excited to get him back and get him going. I mean, that's as much as you can get. Now, it's not definitive, and Andy Reid didn't go so far, but it certainly gives you an indication that the Chiefs as an organization feel like Travis Kelce's coming back. So that's the first bit of big news. Then the other bit is Trey Smith, and basically the sentiment is with an increased salary cap, there is maybe more of a possibility now that they could bring back Trey Smith. It's the first thing we wondered about when we saw the cap go up is, it's not about like what free agents they could bring in. It's more about, to me, like, can they keep some of the guys that are going to be free agents? Let's start with the former. Let's start with Kelce. I mean, if you had any doubts, now maybe you don't. Like, I already thought he was coming back. So this just sort of solidifies it for me.
Yeah, I never thought that he was seriously going to walk away. I know that he was a little up in the air, you know, during his podcast and all of that. But if you think back to even before the Super Bowl, he was definitive then that he was going to continue playing. And I know things change when you play on the biggest stage and you're disappointed and you walk away and you're exhausted at the end of it. It's been a long season, all of that. But every time there was this, like, speculation, again, some of it he brought on himself with his podcast, I just thought back to, man, he was very, like, definitive before the Super Bowl that he was going to continue playing. And I don't know all of a sudden what's changed. I think that he just needs a little bit of time off and to catch his breath, and he'll be okay. So I was never overly concerned that he wasn't going to return. I guess that there still is that chance. But, you know, even all along and up until yesterday, I still felt confident, and I still do, especially after what Brett Veach said yesterday.
It's kind of one of those things for me. It's like, what is making people think that he won't come back, I guess, is where it starts for me. Like, and I know, like, people that are, whether they're kind of probably just being trolls a little bit, like, oh, Taylor Swift is too distracting and he just doesn't care and he's got all this other stuff going on. And I'm like, guys, like, hang on a minute. Have you ever watched star athletes and all the things they have going on? He doesn't, like, he's not to the point in his life yet, to me, that things would make him step away. The thing that would make Travis Kelce step away for me is if the ultimate competitor felt like he didn't have enough left in the tank to deliver for his teammates. I think that's been the struggle. And again, I don't think that's anywhere close to reality. Like, the dude was still a top five tight end in the league last year in an environment where he's still being treated like he's the best tight end in football by defenses. And so he's got plenty left in the tank. Travis Kelce doesn't have to be this team's best offensive player anymore, hopefully. And he can still provide them a ton. And at times, I think he still can. Has he dropped off some physically? Sure, he has. He's almost, you know, he's old, especially for that position. That's going to happen. Does that mean he doesn't help the offense? Of course it doesn't. Does that mean he doesn't make the team better? Of course it doesn't. And so that's the part for me where it's like, if he was not still an elite level player, maybe, but he's still an elite level player. And I find it hard to imagine him walking away from that.
It is imperative, though, that I think the Chiefs this coming season, assuming he's back, they've really got to get serious about what the offense will look like post-Travis Kelce. And I'm not saying that you don't continue to utilize him, because I think you absolutely do. He's a Hall of Famer. Right. You definitely do. But if there had been thoughts in the past about, okay, like, we should probably, you know, try to maybe lean on somebody else or maybe try to de-emphasize him from time to time, and they haven't been able to do that in the past, They absolutely will need to do that in 2025, I think, just to prepare themselves for what things could look like when it does happen that he does walk away.
I honestly think the plan is to have Worthy and Rice, and that's a good plan. The problem for me has always been they're not going to have Rice for too much of this season to let that be the plan this season, which is why I've always said if he goes away, they're going to have to find something. if he's back, they're in much better shape, right? They're in much better shape if he's back, because then whenever and however long and whatever the suspension for Rice looks like, you're clear of it. Now, is that a long term? Because then you're going to talk about Rice as a potential free agent not too far down the road. They just need to keep at, they're going to have to redesign it, because you'll never replace the production from that position that he's given them for 13, 14 years, whatever it is. That'll be much easier to do after next season when they have Rice and Worthy there together, and you don't have to worry about how many games is Rice going to miss. Like, that's going to be tough if as much as I love the development of Xavier Worthy, like, he's got to be a piece of things,
is
right?
It
he's not
weird
Jamar
to you,
Chase.
By the way, like, the whole Rashee Rice suspension, it's nowhere to be found. Like, there's literally no talk about it. I read an article, and I can't remember where it came from. I think it was Sports Illustrated, if I'm remembering correctly, just the other day, where it was, you know, talking about the offense for Kansas City, regardless of Travis Kelce returned, and about, you know, the pairing of Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy. Nowhere in that article did it even mention that there could be a potential suspension for Rashee Rice sometime in the season. It was like, you know, having a full season of Rice and Worthy together is going to be incredible for the Chiefs offense, regardless if Travis Kelce is back. And I'm like, wait a second, like, did this just go away? Like,
no.
It's literally nowhere to be found at this point.
It has to be just that it has left the front of the mind. He's not going to not get suspended. He admitted he did it, right? There's not like a whenever. I think the issue has been, when does whatever the legal thing play itself out? But he's admitted guilt here. Like, the NFL doesn't have, like, they don't have to investigate that part of it, right? They're waiting for the actual legal process to work out, but he's already told you at least some of what happened. He'll get suspended just for that. How long is it for, and all that other stuff? That will still be, you know, he's on camera. Like, I mean, he's going to get suspended. Yeah. It's just, when does it happen and for how long, I think, are still very much questions. We've never known the how long piece. That's always been speculated on. The when appears to now be after the actual legal part of this plays out. For the Chiefs, I think a best case scenario, honestly, is just to have it happen at the beginning of the year. I mean, you just get it over with. I don't know what else they'll add. It's an interesting, like, what should they add? I would love to see at least one of, if not two of, if you can get them back on very small deals, some combination of, you know, Juju, Hollywood, and DeAndre Hopkins. It would be very nice to have two of those guys teed up for next season. I don't know how realistic that is.
I think you could probably
Hollywood
have one of them.
Will be the most expensive of the three, for sure. But he didn't get a chance to prove it the way he wanted to. So I would imagine there's some appetite for him to come back. And then DeAndre Hopkins and Juju Smith-Schuster would absolutely have an appetite to come back. I think that's more of a, do the Chiefs have an appetite to bring them back situation. But even if you had Rice, like, you'd still like at least one more to go with that combination of things for Mahomes. I would think this year. I would think. Could be wrong. They might be very comfortable with where they're at. Guy Felix Johnson, we were joking around a little bit. He wasn't joking. Luther Burton out of Mizzou, who's a highly touted receiver, is being said to slip. And then the Chiefs like to draft players from kind of their own backyard, and certainly he would fit that profile. He'd be a hard kind of player to pass up on if a player like him was there. You hear that, and it's like, okay. And then you see the desire to maybe bring Trey Smith back, which is the next piece of the news yesterday that we'll talk about, which I'd totally be on board with. But then all of that being said, like, what do you do to solve left tackle then? If you bring Smith back, there's your free agent dollars that you maybe would spend on left tackle. Would you rather have Trey Smith or a guy like Ronnie Stanley? That's a great question that I don't have a definitive answer to. Again, I don't know how good Ronnie Stanley is. I just know he's the most expensive and at the top of most lists of this offseason, right? I'd probably rather have Trey Smith back, if I'm being perfectly honest, because we know what Trey Smith is, and we know what can happen with pressure up the middle as much as on the edge. So, I don't know what a best case scenario is there, but like, if they've got a chance to bring Trey Smith back, I'd bring Trey Smith.
But I think the question also has been, what's the depth look like at right guard? I mean, would they need to go and try to replace Trey Smith? Do they have internal candidates to do that?
Caliendo,
right? Is it Caliendo that, you know, slots into that starting role? And so while we've been talking, and rightfully so, about left tackle, what's kind of been, I think, forgotten about in all of this is, in the event that Trey Smith does leave, who's playing right guard? Either.
Right. Yeah, it's true, because pressure up the middle is even worse than pressure off the edge for Mahomes. And that's for sure a factor. If you can get Trey Smith back, you bring Trey Smith back. Now, if it breaks the bank and getting Trey Smith back costs you a left tackle and Nick Bolton and Charles Minnehue and Justin Reed, then I think that's the conversation you have to have. But if I'm prioritizing this long list of, like, a wish list of players coming back, it would start with Trey Smith, then it would go to Nick Bolton, then it would probably go to Minnehue, then it would go to Reed. Now, those are the headline guys. There's a whole lot more guys than that. And then after those guys, I would probably get into those wide receivers we mentioned. But it would start with Smith for me still. Like, of all the free agents to prioritize, it just comes back to, like, what do you do at left tackle? I don't know if there's another team out there that would do. I'm kind of starting to sense that the Chiefs are going to trade for a left tackle. I think there's going to be a trade. Whether they trade for a left tackle directly, like they did with Orlando Brown and Juwan Taylor, or whether it is a significant draft type trade that moves them way up in the first round, I think there's a trade in the Chiefs' future that is how they attack left tackle again. I don't think it's going to be free agency. I just don't. It's just a gut thing. I don't think they're going to go unload the Brinks truck for a free agent left tackle.
But I think the question then becomes, what team is trading their starting left tackle? Like, who's going to be willing to do that?
Two suitors in the past. You know, they've found two trade, and one worked and one didn't. I think you got to look at a team that has an impending free agent that wants to be a left tackle if you're going to do it again. And then you just hope that, you know, Orlando Brown was a really interesting situation. Orlando Brown was an okay left tackle. He's certainly better than what they've had without him, but he wanted to get paid and did get paid like a premier left tackle. Was that the right thing to do? I don't know. I was very vocal about not giving him that kind of money. So, I mean, I think the Chiefs probably handled it perfectly. I don't mind them trading pick 31. I don't. The Chiefs' strength in the draft is not that pick, right? They Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You've got Felix Anudike Uzama. Like, that's a very much wild card pick anyway. So I have no issue if they use that pick to trade around and do whatever it is that they need to do. It's not a place in the draft where they gotta have that pick, right? It's essentially a second round pick.
Yeah, I wonder who that is. Like, I don't know. Shopping potentially a left tackle that they could trade.
I don't think they'll be shopping a left tackle. I think they'll be shopping a right tackle. I think that's what it would be again. Can you move somebody over? And again, you know, you got a little track record. Orlando Brown was a success. You know, I know it didn't lead to ultimately him being this premier left tackle like maybe they thought he could be, but they got good years in Super Bowls out of Orlando Brown. Juwan Taylor has been an abject failure, right? Yeah, I know they won two Super Bowls with Juwan, or a Super Bowl with Juwan Taylor, but he's not been what they traded for, not even close. Like, it's not like he's in a different conversation than like Frank Clark and Orlando Brown, who were never the elite players they, you know, hoped they could be, but still helped them win Super Bowls. Like, Juwan Taylor was supposed to come over, and he hadn't even played a snap at left tackle, and he's been penalized and not very good right tackle either. So that one was a failure.
Yeah. So I'm just looking up Pro Football Focus. They've got a list of the top 15 potential trade targets this offseason. There are a couple of offensive tackles on the list. Tell me if you feel like either one of these guys, you know, get you excited for the Chiefs to trade for. We're talking about Trevor Penning from the Saints. Offensive tackle. He was a first-round pick in 2022. He's played for three years. Hasn't been great, but he is a former first-round pick. He played right tackle last year, but, you know, I don't know what his likelihood is to play left.
I'd say no.
And then the other guy is Evan Neal from the Giants, also another former first-round pick. He's been extremely disappointing in the NFL. Yeah. Those are like the two top guys.
I remember his name more.
Potentially available, at least according to Pro Football Focus, that could be on the trade market that are offensive tackles this offseason.
Well, and the other thing you I think you can do there is you can go and you can look in the NFL right now and say, who are the teams that like will unquestionably be rebuilding next year, right? Like there aren't very many of them, right? We've kind of done this before. Like, who comes into next year and feels like they don't have any chance at all? It's not very many teams across the league. Tennessee is going to be in that camp. Cleveland's going to be in that camp, whether they think they are or not. The Jets don't have any good linemen anyway, so you wouldn't want to bark up that tree. I think everybody else, even if you think they're going to be a bad team, has some thought that they could be a good team. So they're not going to want to trade, or they've got, like, let's say, a young quarterback who they're not going to trade, right, a tackle to protect them. So you don't have a lot of teams you can even do this with. That's what makes it really difficult.
Hindsight being 2020, Felix Johnson brought this up yesterday, and I remember thinking it at the time. I had forgotten about it until he brought it up yesterday. Going back to the 2024 season for the Vikings, when Christian Darrisaw went down with the injury and then they traded for Cam Robinson, I remember at the time being like, man, if the Vikings were able to trade for Cam Robinson, I wish the Chiefs would have, like, you know, but, and I don't know the financials. I don't know the likelihood of that being even realistic for Kansas City, but man, like, in retrospect, they could have solved the issue potentially during the season last year if the Jags obviously were willing to move a guy like Cam Robinson and the Vikings got him and the Chiefs didn't. That, you know, that could have been a fun what if.
The other problem for us is we don't have practice. We don't have drills. We don't know how much growth they could potentially see between Wanye Morris and Kingsley Suamataia. Not that you would feel comfortable running that back in the same form, but it also, like, okay, well, you know, Joe Tooney can help you. Like, can you just build depth on the line with Joe Tooney out there being your backup plan? If you have Trey Smith back, right? Could you do that potentially and just continue to bet on your coaches being able to coach up those other two relatively high pedigree guys up? I mean, you could bring in six undrafted free agent tackles and hope one sticks. The reality is, though, most of the time, that kind of like quarterback, that is one of the positions in the NFL where it almost is always tied to a high pedigree. For the really good ones. So, like, a high draft pick type pedigree, right? We've gone through that exercise too. This entire conversation we're having, back to the news of yesterday, kind of makes me really hope they can bring back Trey Smith. Just have depth, if nothing else. It is Sports Daily here on KFH, and we are joined by Shreyas Lada, our KU insider. Shreyas, glad to be here with you. Certainly feels a little more festive than the last time we talked. Yeah, feeling a little bit better than last week.
Yeah, no, absolutely. They've won two straight games the first time since mid-January. Obviously, the teams weren't very good, but it's about stacking up wins at this point of the season, right? Like, that's all that matters. You're going into a three straight rank opponents. And I wrote about it after the Colorado game, but you know, they somehow managed to win two out of the last three. They're going in a Big 12 tournament, a 4-1 record in the last five. So that's not a bad place to be in for KU basketball.
Well, right. And look, just kind of digging in this week, and it would have been before that game against Colorado. Like, at the end of the day, and you go into the stretch, and I think I took it back to the Iowa State game, the one that they lost that sort of started this really bad stretch. The thing that stands out more than anything else, right? Normally, when you talk about bad basketball, turning the ball over too much, they weren't doing that. Same as in the wins, right? We've talked a million times about how they're not a good three-point shooting team. They're actually taking fewer threes in their wins than their losses, albeit at a higher clip that they're making them at.
Yeah,
it's pretty simple. They just haven't played any defense on the road during this stretch. Like, they don't defend on the road. That's why that game against Colorado, even though maybe you feel like it should have been a bigger win, they play defense on the road against Colorado, so much so that in a game they were severely out-rebounded, they were still able to get a 7-point win like that. That I think is as promising as anything. Like, it's the first time we've seen them play good defense on the road, Trius, in like a month and a half.
I think that's a good thing. And I mean, like, but my thing to me with this team is, am I supposed to applaud the fact that they're beating a team that has 9 wins?
No.
And 2 wins in the conference in Colorado or Oklahoma State? Like, these are bad teams where, like, the expectations are so low that we're asking ourselves, a team that was ranked number 1 in the country coming into the preseason, can they beat these teams? How am I supposed to have a belief in this team? Because they haven't shown that they've changed their play style around. The Oklahoma State game was one game where they shot 26 threes between 3 guys. The Colorado game, the habits were the exact same. Take away the 4 minutes in the beginning of the game, they played the exact same they've played the rest of the way. Colorado is just not a good team. So I think it's great they've built momentum, and it's great they have this whole thing. It's like, oh, new season, new season, new season. But winning matters against teams that are actually going to be good enough to play in the NCAA tournament. Texas Tech, good enough to play in the NCAA tournament. Arizona, good enough to play in the NCAA tournament. Houston, good enough to play in the NCAA tournament. Because they played Allen Fieldhouse, I feel a lot more confident they're going to beat them. But my issue becomes when the Big 12 tournament is there, not necessarily that. Like, after the first game, are they going to win against a good Big 12 team? I don't know. I think I said on Twitter the other day, if KU was playing any mid-level Big 12 team on Monday, they would have lost that game. They didn't play good enough to win that basketball game against a quality or at least a decent Big 12 team.
But it was different than the losses they've had because they didn't lose it. That was the scenario for a month that we've seen play out where it's like, oh, they're going to lose this game that they shouldn't lose. And they didn't. Bill Self's not a cliche guy. You know that as well as I do. Like, that's not his thing. I do think there is more reality to this 1-0, 2-0 thing, because that honestly is the only thing that will save them, is if they forget about February and most of January. Like, you got to forget about that and just go be the best version of Kansas, because the reality is, and we all know this, the best version of Kansas is as good as any team in this country. They've showed that this year, right? Now, can it travel? What makes it travel? Why hasn't it traveled? Doesn't make sense, honestly, that it hasn't traveled. It doesn't make sense that the defense doesn't travel. It doesn't make sense that a team this experienced has the mental lapses on the road that it's had. So if you're going to wipe all that stuff away, that's where, for like Colorado, like, I don't even care that it was Colorado. Like, it's been a long time since they've done that. And they did that. Can they do it against a good team? We'll find out against Houston. But, you know, in the short term, what they've done in the last week is something we hadn't really seen in a while. So when we talk 1-0, 2-0, I do think there's substance to that.
No, I don't disagree. I think it's a positive sign. But the question I ask myself is, eventually Kansas basketball is going to self-correct, right? And, you know, I didn't think they were going to play 500 ball the rest of the season. I looked at this schedule and I was like, well, the last 7 games they have are the easiest part of the schedule for them. And they are the ones who messed up the Utah-BYU stretch. Like, they should have won at least one of those games. BYU's not a good enough team. They fired the head coach. Like, obviously, they expected more than what they've expected. I mean, a couple of years ago, a win against Kansas would have bought a head coach at least another year. To me, that's more alarming than anything else. I think it's a great thing that they've won 2 in a row. I think it's great that they're telling themselves this identity of, you know, the new season starts now, new season starts now. But what happens when they get punched in the face and they lose a game? Because they're not going to finish the season 5-0. I'd be very surprised if they beat Houston on the road. I think Texas Tech could be a toss-up, depends on how Kansas starts. And Arizona's a good team too. But, you know, I think they can go 2-1 in the next 3 games, which is a great, great consolation prize, 4-1 to end of the season. And I think 100% is relying on because of the fact that they're playing in Allen Fieldhouse. Like, that's my thing. And my question to anybody who watches Kansas is, where is the belief that they're going to be able to do this if the matchups aren't their way in the first or second round of the tournament? Like, I think they'll win first round. What happens in the second round? They haven't gone to the second round in 3 years.
You think this is a matchup team? I don't think it's a matchup team.
I think a little bit could be a matchup team. Like, I think,
not like,
you know,
last
depending on who they play. That's true. Depending on who they play, they could go to the Sweet 16. I was talking to somebody about this yesterday, but to me, the ceiling of this team is a Sweet 16 team. Maybe Elite Eight if they get the right matchups and get hotter or whatever. But I'd be surprised if they get further along than the last 2 years' teams, because I don't think they're as good as, you know, I'd say, I don't know if they're better or, you know, they might have a higher ceiling than last year's team, but I think their floor is lower than last year's team.
Yeah, look, right now, I'm just looking. So Lunardi has them as a sixth seed in Providence. They'd play Ohio State in the first round. Obviously, they could win that game. That's a pretty it's a pretty tough matchup, though. I've seen Ohio State. They're not bad. And then it would be a Kentucky matchup in the second round. And then, you know, and it's in the region with like Memphis, Michigan State, who they've already beaten this year. It's not so much to me about matchups as it is, do they just bring it? Do they bring the attitude and the energy? Matchups don't tell me they should lose to Utah, right? It's not a matchup thing. That wasn't the reason they lost to Utah. Well, that wasn't because of matchups. They didn't lose and give up 60 points in the second half to Baylor because of matchups. That's not been the issue. Has been attitude and energy. This team, when it's good, is good enough to beat anybody. We couldn't say that about last year's team. You couldn't go on February 26th and said, you know what? If KU plays its best game, it can beat anybody. I think we can say that about this team. It's just what's the likelihood they're going to do it. That's why I love the 1-0-2, like a total reset. And we didn't know last week if they could pull that off, right? That's a big ask. But, you know, they're off to a good start.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's baby steps, right? But to me, when I look at the big picture of the fact that we're literally talking about them restarting the season, metaphorically, in mid-February, late February, is a disaster. And I try not to be I try not to be like existential or alarmist or whatever too often. But man, like, let's call it what it is. This team should not even be in the position when we're having to do this crap. Like, they have the most Division I experience in college basketball. They shouldn't be as bad on the road as they are. And they shouldn't have the offensive habits they have. There's clear deficiencies in that, like, big three nucleus of Hunter, KJ, and DeJuan. The guys they brought in haven't been good outside of Diggy Coyote and Zeke Mayo. And even Zeke Mayo struggles on the road. I mean, like, he's just a hodgepodge of different problems. And, like, it to me, like, if Hunter Dickinson was not even 75% as good as he was against Colorado, then they probably lose that game. Like, Hunter Dickinson single-handedly won in that game. And KJ Adams had a great offensive game, but then he didn't get any rebounds. Like, you know, he had one rebound, I think, all game. And, of course, in a game where you get out-rebounded 41-36, and I think it was huge on the glass, where I think Colorado had, like, a 10 or 15, 12 point advantage in second chance points. You just can't have that. And then, like, against a team that's bad at rebounding, like Colorado was 223rd in offensive rebounding percentage. They were not a good rebounding team. So that's the worry to me, is they let teams hang around because of laziness and bad habits and a mixture of bad roster construction. Let's call it what it is. This roster has not been what anyone thought it has been. And I really don't know if I can sit there and say they're going to beat Ohio State or whoever they play first round, because we've seen them lose to worse teams this year. We've seen them beat really good teams as well. But the idea of Kansas winning two in a row or three in a row in Big 12 tournament time or even NCAA tournament time, I need to see it to believe it. Like, that's where I'm at with this team.
The Big 12 tournament's going to give us a good gauge because they're neutral court games. So that will be important. Look, I think if they can just get them bought in, though, then it becomes more of, can Bill Self coach them through it? Because if you're going to give more minutes to Diggy Coit, and then you're running like 3 point guards out there, you're obviously going to give something up on the boards. If you're going to run Flory out there to not give something up on the boards with Hunter and KJ, you're going to give up something offensively. So it's going to take some button pushing for Bill Self, but he can't push any buttons if everybody's not bought in. First things first, you got to get everybody bought in. Let's talk about Diggy Coit for a second. Sharice Lotta joining us, KU beat reporter for the KC Star, our KU insider. Find his work on social at SHRE98 at the KC Star. So Diggy, Hunter called Diggy the confidence guy right now. Boy, if he could get it, like, he solves a problem for them, right? How do you think he can garner a larger role here down the home stretch?
I think that's where we're at. He needs a larger role. DeJuan needs to play less minutes. Zeke needs to play a little less minutes. You know, they need Diggy to be about there and then give them like 10, 12 off the bench like that. That's where we're at. They need him to space the floor. I think he's the only player besides Zeke May on this team that's unafraid to shoot the three anywhere on the court. I think that's a very underrated skill because this Kansas team just doesn't take enough threes. And Scalps talked about how he's this leader of the team, which to me, alarming, very alarming, that a guy that they brought in is now the leader. And I get it. He's charismatic. He's a good kid. I say kid as he's probably only a couple of years younger than me. You know, he's a good player. He's gets along well with his teammates. Chemistry seems pretty well. So I get it. But I think his role, depending on who they play, again, because he's a short guard that could get abused on defense, can be expanded depending on matchups. I think in Big 12 tournament time, though, they need to play him heavier minutes. And same thing with NCAA tournament. I'm not saying he needs to play 30 minutes a game, but you know, 20, 25, depending on the matchup, wouldn't be bad. I think he offers something Kansas lacks outside of Zeke Bayo.
And maybe it's a combination, two of those three at any point, anytime. But I think I'm with you in the sense that hoping it's going to be Store or Griffin seems less likely than it just being Coit, right? Which we saw that at the beginning of the season. Everyone's like, Diggy Coit. Like, what? Okay. I didn't have that on my bingo card that he's going to be the guy, and he was for a little while. So it'll be interesting. All right, Sharius, what do you have coming for us here for KU? The next one isn't until Saturday, but I know you guys are following this thing closely as always.
Yeah, I'll have a scouting breakdown on Friday and mailbag, obviously NFL Combine stuff with all the Kansas guys too. Just keep an eye on that. And then working on some big-term, long-term features that's going to be coming out in the next couple of weeks. But just something with the Store thing, I've heard he's working really hard to try and get right. You know, has been, you know, 45 minutes after every game, before, you know, practices. Like, he's trying to put in the work. I think he's putting a lot of pressure on himself, and it shows in the game. So I'm curious to see if he has like one of those games in the Big 12 tournament or the NCAA tournament where he just goes off. It could happen, right? Last year we saw Nick Timberlake do it. Why not AJ Store, who's even more talented?
We saw Remy Martin do it in their national championship year. I mean, it can happen. I'm with you, Shreyas. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
There goes Shreyas Lotta. A lot of good stuff there. You can go back and listen to all of it on the Odyssey app. If you missed anything, Kevin Saul in the first hour, you can go back and listen to that as well on the Odyssey app. Man, KU, I still can't believe we're even having these conversations again in year two of this group. All right, that'll do it for us here on Sports Daily. Great show. Great to be with you on a Wednesday. We are glad to be back doing it again tomorrow. TJ Cleland will be in. We'll have Tim Fitzgerald, K-State insider, joining the program. We'll get the latest on Coleman Hawkins and whatever happens tonight in K-State's game out in Florida against UCF. Also getting you ready for a shocker game. By the way, you'll hear the K-State game against UCF. Pregame coverage begins at 5 o'clock right here on KFH. You'll have Butler basketball moving over to KNSS AM 1330. Against Garden City. Regular programming before that, so enjoy it. For Tommy, for all our guests today, we appreciate it. For Max, I'm Jacob. We'll see you tomorrow.